This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Today, a sign that layoffs are declining,
but jobs are still pretty scarce.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hi, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the Midday Update from Marketplace.org, and it's Thursday, October 7th. News from the Labor Department today that first-time unemployment claims fell by 11,000 last week to 445,000. It's good the number dropped, but it still confirms the jobs aren't pouring in. Analysis is straight ahead. Later, a city slaps a bright orange square sticker on your house. What could that possibly mean? But first,
let's welcome economist Diane Swonk of Mesirow Financial. She joins us every Thursday from Chicago. Good morning.
Good morning.
New claims for jobless benefits fell last week by 11,000, better than expected. How good is that?
Well, it's good in that it's the right direction. It's bad in that last week's data was revised up. And basically, we're still on trend for unemployment claims being way too high. And tomorrow's data on employment will likely contract because we've got more than 80,000 census workers still coming off those temporary hires the government made to do the 2010 census.
Okay. Sorry to hear that. Unemployment is high in lots of countries, Diane. And this week, we've been seeing these countries competing to stimulate their own economies, possibly at each other's expense. How concerned are you that hard times will bring a wave of economic nationalism and protectionism?
I'm certainly very concerned. What we've seen is a real reaction out there. One is to manipulate currencies to try to get exports up. And if that doesn't work, some of these countries are threatening fairly major tariffs, including our own. And unfortunately, the lessons of protectionism, as simplistic as they seem to someone on the street, the lessons that we've learned from the Great Depression and other periods of high protectionism is that they cause further unemployment, not more employment out there. They don't protect many jobs. They actually cost us even more jobs, and our economies contract when we stop trading with each other. So this is something of real concern, especially as we run into those November elections, which are going to be tough no matter how they're cut.
We'll keep following this story. Economist Diane Swonk of Mesirow Financial, thank you.
Thank you.
A lot of companies have been tightening up since the recession, becoming more efficient, doing more with fewer people, and that's allowed them to save some money. Marketplace's Eve Troeh is with us in the studio to talk about it. Good morning, Eve.
Good morning.
So if these companies are doing more with less, what are they doing with all that extra money?
Well, they are buying their own stock. They're taking it off the market. That makes the number of shares more scarce, which drives up the price, which looks good to investors. And because interest rates are so low, it's cheap to borrow money to buy it. Microsoft recently did that. The investment firm Barini says companies are doing this five times more than they were last year. The Washington Post has an article on the issue today. And actually, its board at the Washington Post company, they bought back a ton of shares last month. And their stock jumped more than 4% the day that they announced that. So it's a trend and it works.
So buying back stock, Eve, what else are they getting with that extra cash?
Well, I spoke with Jeff Sott at Raymond James, and he says companies are also rebuilding their inventories. He says that's a first step toward a bigger economic recovery.
Once the inventory rebuild slows, then you get companies spending money on plant and equipment.
So once their inventory is full, then they'll commit to new plants and equipment. And, of course, they'll need people to run that. And slowly, we'll start seeing jobs.
All right. Marketplace's Eve Troeh here in Los Angeles. Eve, thanks.
Thank you.
From private companies that have some extra money to states that do not, nonprofits that provide services for those states for food assistance and housing, they're not getting paid very fast. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
The Urban Institute surveyed nonprofits across the country and found 41% had problems with late payments from government agencies. Elizabeth Boris conducted the survey. She says nonprofits are in bad shape.
About 40% at the end of 2009 were in the red. They're in pretty weak financial shape going forward.
Boris says some nonprofits are cutting overhead and staff. That's what Christine Bork is doing. She heads the Chicago YWCA. The state of Illinois pays the Y to run programs for victims of sexual violence. But the state is about $400,000 behind in payments. Bork is cutting costs, trying to keep the programs going.
We're probably serving close to 20, 30,000 people every year. If we stop, what happens to those people?
Other nonprofits are asking the same question. The Urban Institute says 82% of them are scaling back their programs. Half have frozen or cut salaries. Some might fold. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
You've probably heard the accusations. Banks have been improperly foreclosing on properties and evicting owners. Now the Justice Department is looking into those charges. Ally Financial, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Bank of America have halted foreclosures in 23 states while they try to figure out whether legal paperwork is actually legal. We asked Marketplace's Elisa Roth what the freeze will do to the real estate market.
Clifford Rowe is a real estate broker on the Gulf Coast of Florida. Florida is one of the 23 states where some banks have suspended foreclosures. Almost all of his business is selling properties that banks have repossessed. He says he's doing a quarter of the business he used to.
The banks have just said, whoa, stop, can't close it. So they're pulling them at the closing table. Or they're calling us up and saying we're not going to close. So, I mean, they're just disappearing.
Rowe says he still has customers who want to buy foreclosed houses, but he has to warn them.
I tell them that, you know, this property, as far as we know, we can sell it, but that could change tomorrow. So understand that.
Just to be clear, this is a pause. Most of these foreclosures will probably stick, but it could take months to sort that out. Chris Mayer is a real estate professor at Columbia's Business School.
You know, home buyers are going to be worried, you know, maybe I should wait 6 months until the foreclosures come back in the market.
And all that uncertainty will probably delay the economic recovery even more because the real estate market is such an important part of it. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, October 7th. I'm Steve Chiatakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers section at our website, marketplace.org. We're going to get a take now on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects us in the United States. A UK government report out today says a couple of things could very well go up soon there. Contributions to retirement and the overall retirement age. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
We know that a lot of governments are facing huge fiscal challenges right now. What's so special about this public sector pension problem in Britain?
There is a particular problem here because unlike in the US, most public sector pensions in Britain are unfunded. They're paid out of current tax revenue. So today's public sector retirees mostly have their pensions paid by today's taxpayers. As people live longer, this represents an ever-increasing burden on the public purse. And it's reckoned that if this system is not reformed, the cost of paying public sector retirees will double to $15 billion a year by 2015 and increase exponentially into the future.
So what changes are pensioners in the UK facing?
Today's interim report recommends that the retirement age for public sector workers should be raised from 60 to 65. Only fair, says the report, since that would bring it into line with the private sector. Why should private sector workers work till 65 so they can fund the retirement of early retirement of private sector workers? It also says that public sector workers must make a bigger contribution to their own pensions. There's going to be trouble over this, though, Steve. No doubt about it. Public sector unions today were warning of a huge wave of French-style anti-austerity strikes.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Public health officials from more than three dozen Asian-Pacific countries are meeting today in Australia to look at ways to tackle smoking. The tobacco industry has been targeting developing countries more and more. The BBC's Phil Mercer has the story from Sydney.
Countries like India and China have been targeted by the tobacco industry because they're profitable. They've got a high growth rate in terms of population, and they have less regulation of tobacco products. But health experts worry that the loss of life could get worse as tobacco companies increasingly target consumers in developing countries. It's estimated that if current trends continue, the number of smoking-related deaths in China alone will reach 2 million a year by 2020. Dr. Surin Putsuan, the Secretary General of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, says a concerted global approach is needed.
We need to be united and strong in standing up against the international onslaught to turn our people into smokers.
But in some emerging economies, governments often control tobacco monopolies and rely heavily on cigarette taxes for revenue. That makes efforts to reduce smoking difficult. For their part, many major tobacco companies, including British American Tobacco, deny specifically targeting or exploiting developing markets. In Sydney, I'm the BBC's Phil Mercer for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, October 7th. I'm Bill Radke. If you want to know how the markets are doing, don't call your broker. She'll probably just charge you. Just go to the numbers at marketplace.org. We've been talking about jobs today with the first-time jobless claim numbers out this morning. We're going to get the government's monthly employment report tomorrow, and the experts figure our unemployment rate will not be coming down then or anytime soon. The question is, will it come down eventually, and what would it take to make that happen? Economists are debating exactly that question, says Marketplace's economics editor, Chris Farrell. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
So I know the more liberal economists, the Paul Krugmans of the world, have been saying the government should spend more to bring back jobs.
Well, that's right. They're saying that this unemployment is cyclical. Now, that's a fancy term for this dynamic. Economy's weak. Employers aren't hiring. If the government can stimulate the economy really starts growing, then employers will hire workers, the unemployment rate will fall. But here's the thing, Bill. There's some really respected economists who are saying, no, hold on a second. This high unemployment isn't cyclical, it's structural.
Yes, structural. What do they mean by that?
What they mean is companies have jobs, but they can't find the skilled workers they need. The workers want to work, but they don't have the skills to get the job. So think laid off construction worker, Silicon Valley firm hiring programmers.
Mm-hmm. So which is it, Chris, cyclical or structural, and why is that so important?
Look, it's both, and I mean that very seriously. It's both because on the one hand, this economy is very weak, and therefore if it starts growing, the unemployment rate will come down. But there's also a fundamental problem in our economy, Bill. That is we have too many poorly educated workers for the kind of jobs that are being created. But here's the thing. I want to just add one other twist. The real worry is the longer this economy grows slowly, the more structural unemployment will become.
And why is that? What happens to jobs and to workers in a long economic slump?
Look, life is not fair. But what happens is you become rusty. You fall behind changes in your industry. And employers, they start looking at the unemployed worker as damaged goods, and it feeds on itself, and it is bad for everyone.
Okay. On that cheery note, thank you for laying that out for us, Chris Farrell, our economics editor. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill.
It wasn't that long ago, Northwest Plaza Mall in suburban St. Louis was bustling with more than 200 stores. Today, only one remains, one store. And when Mike Bartel closes his one-man shoe repair shop within days, Northwest Plaza will officially die. St. Louis Public Radio's Adam Allington produced a profile of this one last mall holdout.
One of the things that we do just about every day is replace heels on men's and women's shoes. Here is a pair of men's shoes. My name is Mike Bartel, and I'm the proprietor of Heel So Quick at Northwest Plaza. Heel Quick. Northwest Plaza Mall used to be the largest mall in the area. There were busloads of people that would come in from Illinois and other parts of Missouri. They would come and do all their shopping here. Here is a pair of men's shoes. As you can see, they're worn down. So what I'm going to do is just take off the old heel or the old part of the heel.
one thing led to another. The loss of some of the jobs, the airlines, the Ford Motor Company, and these were pretty much our core customer group. They just the stores just started to kind of fall off one by one, kind of like leaves falling off a tree in the fall. You know, it just happened. You know, and one day it's there they are, and the next day there they aren't. Now I look down the mall corridors, and I see absolutely nothing because all the stores are closed. It's not frightening, but it's a little disconcerting to be all by myself. Hello, can I help you?
I came out to get some work done. Not too much work, but just liners in my shoes.
Well, let's see what you have there. Figure
that out. Are you going to retire, Mike?
Yes, I am. I'm going to live the good life. But I'm very glad you dropped by. I know life will be good for you after you get those shoes fixed. when your feet don't hurt, you're in good shape.
Yeah. That's your shame.
Take care, sir.
St. Louis Public Radio's Adam Allington put that together for us. There are photos of Northwest Plaza from the good days and the not-so-good days at marketplace.org.
A federal appeals court is set to rule on a case pitting students at the University of Rhode Island against the town of Narragansett. A law allows city police to flag houses that host loud, crazy parties with a big, bright orange sticker.
Now, the ACLU says it violates the Constitution. Landlords of those flagged houses claim it hurts their chances of renting or selling them. Some students, however, see the stickers as code for come inside.
Handy that way.
That's right.
And finally, which non-solo musical act has the most singles ever on the Billboard Hot 100?
The Beatles?
Excellent guess, Steve. And last week, you would have been right.
Yeah.
This week, however, Fox's musical TV show Glee charted 6 more songs, giving the cast 75 hits, and that's 4 more than the Fab Four.
Wait a minute, Bill, didn't James Brown have a bunch of Billboard hits, though?
Yes, he did, yeah. And Glee has 16 hits to go to catch up with Soul Brother number 1.
What about the Soul Brother, Elvis?
Another 18 hits after James Brown, and Glee will have beaten The King and everyone else.
Wow, nice. Don't stop.
Dare to Dream in Los Angeles. I'm Bill Radke.
Sing it, Bill. I'm Steve Chiatakis. You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update.
Don't stop believing.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.